I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Welcome to the hashtag Get Merry podcast, helping you live your healthiest, your happiest, your most merriest life possible. We're your hosts, Emma and Carla Pappas, aka the Merrymaker Sisters, aka the Merries. So are you ready? Let's get merry. I feel really excited again because we have a guest in the office slash studio.
We are always excited.
I know. We're extra excited this week because we have our very good friend and also amazing doctor friend, Leah Freeman, here sitting on the ground with us.
Hello, Leah.
How are you?
Good. How are you?
Very well. Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Oh, it is our pleasure. We're so grateful. So the reason why we realized, well, we've realized before, like, why don't we have Leah on the podcast yet?
I know.
But then especially because this month, October, is Breast Awareness Month.
It is.
And Leah is a breast clinician.
Yes, I am.
You heard that correct.
So what is a breast clinician?
So a breast clinician is a doctor that works in breast medicine, which is, you know, basically its own sort of niche subgroup of medicine. And I look after anyone that's got breasts, basically, so and anything to do with them. So from the whole range of, you know, benign breast disease through to breast cancer, diagnosis, treatment, and follow-up afterwards. So, yeah.
Wow. Oh, my gosh.
And I guess, like, obviously, because it is Breast Cancer Awareness Month.
Is it Breast Cancer Awareness Month or a Breast Awareness Month?
I don't know. I think we should look
it up. We need to Google that, everyone. But anyway, it is all about the boobs. It's all about the breasts. So right now I'm feeling
everyone,
my boobs.
Everyone, just take a moment to be aware of your breasts.
Yes, they're amazing. So I guess, like, I was also doing some stat checks for breast cancer, and it kind of made me be like, whoa. Something, I guess, when you don't have it in your life, you don't really think about it until it's in your life. And then it's like, well, what could have we done before to make sure we knew sooner, blah, blah, blah. And we're going to talk about that more. But, like, in Australia, how many women and men, I guess, are getting diagnosed with breast cancer?
So the current statistics are that 1 in 8 women in their lifetime up to the age of 85 will develop a breast cancer.
Wow.
So, you know, we all know more than 8 women in our lives. So the chances are we're going to have someone in our circle or in our family or that we know or associated with that are going to develop breast cancer.
Whoa.
So, you know, it's a lot. It's, you know.
Yeah, it's like, it's scary. And I guess as well, like, we can thank Hollywood for, like, bringing it to our, like, lives as well. Because, I mean, like, you hear, like, people like Angelina Jolie getting her breast removed. Or, like, I mean, it's even in that show, The Bold Type, they were talking about the BRCA gene and how she found out she had it because her mum died of breast cancer in the show. This is it's obviously like a hot topic right now, and there's obviously lots of movement forward in the medical world with that gene testing as well. So it's a
what is the gene test?
The gene test. So there, most women who get breast cancer do not have a genetic predisposition to getting breast cancer. They're predisposition to getting breast cancer is the fact that they're female and they have breasts. So actually being female is your biggest risk factor for developing breast cancer. There's a subset of women who have a genetic predisposition and have – there's probably about 12 genes that are associated with increasing your risk of breast cancer. And BRCA1 and BRCA2 are the most well-known. And there's familial groups that, you know, when we take their history, we can – have some idea that maybe there's something genetic going on with that family and these women may be at higher risk, and they're recommended to have genetic testing. Certainly going forward, you know, genetic medicine is coming along in leaps and bounds and we'll be doing, you know, a lot more testing in the future than we have been because we know what to do with the information.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, so we will be doing more testing. We're probably not going to find too many more genes that we don't know about.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Got that. But, you know, we're probably going to be testing more women and doing more early intervention and, you know, wow, high-risk screening for women who need it.
Yeah. Ah, okay. So is the intervention, is that right? Yeah. So that's kind of like key, isn't it, to finding the cancer earlier and then treating it, I guess, sooner before it grows or develops.
Yeah.
So that's the goal of like breast cancer awareness and stuff.
Absolutely. So early detection is our biggest tool of, you know, improving your prognosis. So, you know, in the population, you know, that obviously I see the whole spectrum of the breast cancer women, but, you know, for a lot of women when they come to me and they've got an early small breast cancer that's been detected at screening, I can be really quite positive about their prognosis.
Wow.
And, you know, when we talk in terms of, you know, 5-year and 10-year survival, you can be really, you know, give them good figures that, you know, there's good chance you're going to be alive in 10 years because we've caught it early, we've got good treatments and, you know, you can actually, as weird as it sounds, be quite positive about a breast cancer diagnosis because it's not necessarily a death sentence these days.
Yeah.
Oh. Obviously, it's very variable depending on, you know, the individual's, you know, presentation and what they've got. But, you know, a lot of the time we can be quite positive about their prognosis.
It's such a, like, big topic. I'm just like, oh, like it's so, like, oh, my gosh. And like, I just, I can't imagine even working in, like, this field. Like, is it massive? Like, I guess you have to kind of, like, have, like, that kind of separation or, like, I don't know. I don't even know what I'm trying to ask.
Yeah.
Like, how do you not get so sad? Like, I would feel really sad every day.
I mean, I sort of look at, you know, it sounds a bit naff, but I find it a privilege to work with these women and work with them on their journey. And in the work that I do, because I, you know, often see them at diagnosis and then through their treatments and their surgeries and, you know, for at least 5 years after. You know, it's a long a long road and a long journey if we're going to get all Australian Idol about it. Yeah, you know, you get to know these women and, you know, when they get to the other end and, you know, it's nice to be, you know, see them getting on with their lives.
It's like amazing. You're their guide. You're part of the journey.
And, you know, telling someone they've got cancer is a, you know, it's a massive thing. I don't think any doctors take it lightly.
No.
But to be able to feel like you've done it in a way that, you know, done it well, as weird as that sounds, you know, so that the patient, you know, feels supported and has enough information but not too much, you know, not overwhelmed, they have a plan, all that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
I you know, find that, you know, quite a privilege to be able to do that.
Yeah.
I mean, that's like a form of art, really.
Yes.
And to be able to tell someone that kind of news in a way where they feel supported and positive, as you said, when in some cases about it is amazing.
I mean, obviously you don't get that outcome all the time, and I probably do it badly sometimes, but, you know,
you're amazing. You're amazing. Okay, just like take it. I'm saying that must be difficult. You're like, it is, and it's an amazing thing to help these women. And I mean, like, we're so grateful for people like you and doctors because far out. Like, I know, hand up, I could never do it.
Yeah.
I couldn't. I just simply couldn't.
Yeah.
So you are amazing.
They're not the expert in breast cancer, we are. So, you know, you've got to take them under your wing a bit sometimes.
Yeah.
You know, we're going to do all this stuff.
Yeah.
It's really overwhelming for people. It's a lot. You know, your life suddenly changes on the, you know.
Oh, honestly, reading a paragraph, I felt overwhelmed. Mm. Like, that's how I was like.
Yeah.
Like, my heart.
There's suddenly so much information for them and, you know, things that's going to happen to them and decisions to be made and things. And it's a really high pressure time.
Yeah, it's so full on.
Supportive therapy, you know, and being around and, you know, answering questions is a really important part of it all.
So early intervention. Is that what we call it?
Early detection.
Detection.
I don't know.
Well, we talked about interventions as far as the people who know they've got BRCA.
All right. Early detection.
Here we go. For the run-of-the-mill people.
Yes.
Excellent.
Yes. We clarified that.
Yeah.
So what do we need to know about how we do our own checks and how often do we need to get checked by the mammogram?
Yep. So,
and I did a little squishy
alligator.
You were in the room.
I was clapping my hands
down, squishing boobs down and flapped. How flat do they make it, by the way?
Well, I was just talking to a radiologist friend of mine about this morning, and like the machines have come along in leaps and bounds. You know, a lot of women do find it uncomfortable having their mammogram.
Yeah.
You know, the spectrum of how sensitive women's breasts are is just so wide. You know, I often say to patients, some women, I can look at their breasts and it hurts. And other women, I could run them over with a Mack truck and they wouldn't know about it.
Yeah.
You know, somewhere in the middle, everyone else sits. So some women don't even turn a whisker at a mammogram, and other women, you know, can't stand the thought of.
Wow. How interesting. I never really thought about that.
Yeah, I haven't had one yet. Because I don't need one.
You're too young.
Yeah, but you can know if your breasts are super sensitive.
Yeah.
True.
Yep. I understand.
And they probably change across your cycle. And you know,
they're really sore now.
Yes.
Okay. Mammogram.
Mammogram. So, you know, mammograms are still our gold standard for detecting breast cancer. They're an X-ray picture of your breasts that is repeatable, so that from 1 year, or you know, for most women have their mammograms every 2 years, we can compare one to the other and see if there's a change. And the people who read mammograms are, you know, very skilled. And in Australia, all mammograms are double read, which even in the private system, they're double read, two radiologists look at them and make sure that they agree.
Oh wow!
So and certainly in the public system through the breast screening program, They're all double read as well, and sometimes read by a third person.
That's amazing.
So there's lots of, you know, checks in place to try and avoid missing things. But mammograms also don't pick up every breast cancer.
Yeah,
nothing is 100% perfect. We don't have a perfect test for lots of things, but they do certainly pick up, you know, the majority of things that we need to.
Okay. So and then that self kind of like examination.
Yep.
Like, how do you do that?
So it's about being breast aware. So, you know, they've done some studies and they haven't shown that women who are, you know, didactically taught how to examine their breasts and do it every month actually probably pick up more breast cancer or are diagnosed earlier than women who don't. But just being aware of the changes to look for and feel for and, you know what to do with that change is the important thing. So being breast aware just means knowing what's normal for you.
Mm.
And I, you know, people are like, well, you know, how do I know that? So I generally tell people, look, you know, examine your breasts a few times and, you know, you don't want to do it every day. I say do it the week after your period because, as you probably all know, your breasts are getting, you know, sore and lumpier in that couple of weeks before your period.
Why do they get lumpy during your period?
So basically your breasts are every month preparing for you to have a baby and for them to do their job and lactate and breastfeed. Ah. So as you go, you know, after your period, you know, your egg's in there ready to ovulate. And from ovulation, your body's going, yes, I'm going to get pregnant this month. I'm going to do my job. And so your boobs, you know, and the glands and the cells in there are changing and preparing to do all that. So they're getting bigger, they're getting active, and your breasts often get lumpy and sore during that time. Your nipples get sensitive, all that sort of stuff.
So interesting.
And then you disappoint them by having a period and you're not getting pregnant.
Not again.
Again. And so they go into a sulk for another couple of weeks. So they quiet down. You don't hear from them for a couple of weeks until the whole process happens.
Yeah. You're like, ow, again? Yeah. Oh, already?
That happened really fast. It was a quick
month ago. Exactly. Oh, my gosh.
And obviously there's a, you know, the spectrum of how much women notice that themselves. There's a lot of women who would notice no changes in their breasts throughout their month, but a lot of women who could mark the day in their diary by what's going on with their breasts.
Yeah. Oh, so fascinating.
I can tell, definitely.
Yeah. So the week after your period, that is when we should do the self-check.
Yeah, probably because you're less, you know, they're less active, they're less lumpy, they're less tender. You can, A, have a better feel because they don't hurt so much, and they're going to be less lumpy. So you're probably, you know, going to get them at their baseline.
Yeah, okay. And so how would we then do the self-check if you were telling me right now, like what would I do with my body?
Yep. So I tell women to strip off and have a good look in the mirror to start with. So you're, you know, just observing your breasts.
I'm not going to do that.
We are not doing this live in the studio.
It's a mirror.
It's like, I will.
Yeah, yeah, okay.
I'll tell you.
So, you know, you think I get out of the shower every day and dry myself. Yeah. You probably don't have a good look at your breasts. And,
yeah,
you know,
yeah, true.
See what they're doing. So have a look in the mirror. Lift your arms up above your head and see, you know, underneath your breasts and how they move and things like that. So the things you want to look for are obvious lumps that you can see, you know, contour changes that are different, skin changes. So any, especially when you lift your arms up in the air, any puckering or dimpling or tethering of the skin that happens that looks different from what it usually did. You have a good look at your nipples, make sure there's no funny rashes, they're not poking in when they used to poke out, things like that. Yeah, so they're you know, the main things from an observation point of view that you want to have a look at. A lot of people like to examine their breasts in the shower. You know, that's great if it works for you. If you can concentrate for that long, I think most people start thinking about their shopping list and the mold on the floor and get a bit distracted in the shower. So I, you know, when you're getting to know your breasts, I tend to say, look, you know, lie down on your bed. You want to examine the opposite breast with the opposite hand. So, you know, if you examine your left breast, for example, put your left arm on the pillow above your head just to sort of flatten your breast out against your chest wall, and you want to feel it with your right hand.
Ah, okay.
You know, you can do it whichever way you like. Some people like to use a bit of moisturizer or talcum powder or something. You probably don't need that. And you just want to feel with sort of the flat part of your fingers as a gross overall feel of what the texture is of your breasts and, you know, where does it feel thicker? Where does it, you know, where can I feel my ribs, which is a common thing people feel and, you know, immediately panic, but it's, you know, it's common to be able to feel your ribs as well. So, you know, I guess the take home message is if you see or feel anything that feels different or unusual to you, go and see your doctor.
Okay, cool. And then I guess when you first start this kind of like this self-examining thing, do it a few times to get the baseline so you know, okay, that's normal. And then you know if anything else comes about, it's like, okay, book in.
So I normally say, you know, if you're not worried about anything, do it a few months in a row. So you go, yep, they still feel like that. Yep, this is my texture. This is, you know, what is normal for me. You know, and then hopefully you can, you know, pick up if something changes. I also tell people, because they're like, I won't remember month to month, draw a couple of circles in your diary or whatever and just mark, oh, yeah, in that sort of up near my armpit it was a bit thicker. I'm going to check and see if it feels like that next month.
That's nice and easy then to remember. Okay.
And if you do feel something that feels odd, like you feel a lump, you know, give it a couple of days and have another go. As we mentioned earlier, your breasts are constantly changing. So, you know, if you feel something one day and then you can't feel it for the next week, then it's probably going to be okay. But, you know, as I said, if you feel anything that you're worried about, go and see your doctor.
Wow.
Cool. Okay, that's something so cool. We all need to it's add like, to our monthly regime.
Yeah, and such a doable, easy thing.
Yeah, it takes 5 minutes. Yeah. It, you know, we do a lot of, oh, especially at Marybody, they talk about doing lots of nice things for yourself that take longer than 5 minutes. So
yeah, so
5 minutes
true.
Once a month that you can
so
add in. Yeah.
And then that can, like, maybe save your life. So probably worthwhile.
Yeah, it's probably a really good idea, guys.
And also good to talk about it more as well, I think, like, if this topic doesn't come up in your circle, like you're not thinking about it at all. It's not a thing.
Yeah.
So now it's like awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. We're making it a thing.
Yeah.
So I mean, good.
Certainly, girls, you know, don't want to scare anyone. And breast cancer is more common in women who are older. But young women get breast cancer. Women in their 20s and 30s get breast cancer. And we're not screening those women because it's rare. So, but, you know, they're generally self-detected because they feel a lump or notice a change. So, you know, and by that stage, you know, often their breast cancer, you know, can be advanced because young women get more aggressive and, you know, and nastier breast cancers generally.
Bloody hell.
Yeah.
And what about men? Can they get breast cancer?
Yeah, absolutely. So anyone with breast tissue can get breast cancer. So for every 100 women who get a breast cancer, one man gets a breast cancer. So obviously it's a lot rarer. And for a variety of reasons, they don't have the hormonal stimulation that we have. And they don't have as much breast tissue.
Yeah.
Okay. So it would be like, okay, so like when they have like that bigger kind of, that is why they get it because there's bigger of a breast on the man.
It's not funny, but I'm confused.
Are you talking about boobs, Carla?
If we have man boobs, I don't want to call them that.
Okay, so what my question is what is breast tissue? Because is it just like a pec muscle?
Okay.
Because everyone has a pec muscle, right? Yeah. Yeah. Like I'm trying to think, like my boyfriend, he doesn't have that. Like he has like, but he has pec muscles. Like yeah. Is there the potential yeah. that he could get it?
Yeah, so he has pec muscle, but behind his nipple, he'll have a little island of glandular breast tissue.
Oh.
So in your breasts are made up of two things, fat and glandular breast tissue, yeah. basically. And that's pretty much all that's in there. So men have obviously a smaller area of glandular breast tissue than
that makes sense.
Yeah.
Right. Okay, everyone, we've got it.
Yes. So if your boyfriend gets a lump behind his nipple, make him go and see his doctor.
Yeah. Okay, that's good. Cool. Okay, yeah. So should they do breast checks?
I guess so.
Yeah.
Yeah. They're probably better off testing their testicles if they're going to pick one thing to look at a month. But, you know.
Let's do that one next time, Leah. Yeah, we can.
We'll go find your urologist for that.
Leah's breast. Not testicles.
Leah's like, so this is what you should do. I heard.
Oh, God.
Like giggling schoolgirl. Like,
I know. But I guess as well, I think, you know, it is such a serious topic, but it is, I think, humour and lightness
yeah.
creates a place where people can actually feel okay to even come to terms with, oh, it is a possibility, like one yeah. in eight, that's
yeah.
a lot.
Yeah.
And if it's not you, it's someone you're going to know. So it's like, okay, this is important.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So we can laugh about it too, though, like okay. the yeah. whole testicles and yeah. breast things.
Absolutely.
Oh, yeah. So good. Okay, so now we have got clear action steps on what we need to do with our breasts to make sure that we're breast aware. I have a question. What is breast density?
Good.
Because I saw an advertisement yeah, for it. Yeah. And I was like, then I Googled it mm-hmm. and I was like, I'm confused.
Yeah.
This, what is this thing?
So breast density gets back to that, the two things that are in breasts, which is fat and glandular mm-hmm. tissue. So breast density, you can only tell how dense your breasts are by looking at a mammogram. Really, it's a visual thing. You can feel people's breasts and then they can look very different on a mammogram.
Oh.
Breast density refers to the ratio of that fat to glandular tissue.
Oh, okay.
So women who have low breast density, so it's graded 1 to 4, so women with a, you know, grade 1 breast density, mm-hmm. Have a very and it's got nothing to do with their body habitus, but just have a lot of fat versus glandular tissue in their breast, which for them is a good thing in that it makes their mammograms much easier to read for the radiologists and people who do that. So, you know, and women who have a breast density of 4, so they have a lot of glandular tissue, their mammograms are really complicated and often, you know, we worry about missing things in women with higher breast density because it's just more difficult to see. So they are often recommended to have maybe something else as part of their screening as well, such as an ultrasound, or do it more frequently. So at the moment, through Breast Screen, which is the national screening program for breast cancer, we aren't reporting on breast density because we're not really sure at the moment, you know, what to do with that information or how to change our screening programs to fit those women. But certainly, you know, if you have a mammogram done privately with your GP, you know, it's worthwhile asking them, you know, do I have dense breasts or not? And, you know, just to know. And watch this space in what we're going to do with breast density, because probably come, you know, down the track, we will change our screening for women based on what their density is.
Right. Well, now it makes sense.
Yeah.
Because so Google did not help.
But the only way to tell that is with a mammogram.
And it really is.
You can't feel
how dense by what you look like or what you feel.
Unfortunately not. You know, you could and women often come in and see me and they're like, I've got really dense breasts. They're, you know, hard to feel, they're lumpy, but their mammograms aren't particularly dense, which is good for them. And vice versa, you'll have women whose, you know, breasts feel, you know, they're small and they're smooth and they're all that sort of stuff. And you look at their mammogram and, you know, they're uber dense, as I say. So, you know, you really can't pick it. So it's not really until you have your first mammogram that you really know.
When should you have your first mammogram? What age?
So the screening program is open from women from 40. So the target age of screening and, you know, lots of research goes into making screening programs and finding out, you know, where's where do you get the best bang for your buck, and where are you going to pick up diseases in the most women and make the most difference? So the screening target age is 50 to 74. Mm-hmm. So women between 50 and 74 are invited every 2 years to come and have their screening mammogram. Mm-hmm. Breast screen is available to women from 40. So you're just not going to get invited. But you can ring up and make an appointment and go every 2 years, and many women are taking up
the option, which is cool. Great. That's so amazing. Mm. Australia is so amazing.
We are very lucky compared to a lot of other countries that, you know, places like England only screen every 3 years. So, and it's very different all around the world. But we've got a pretty good system.
Well, I mean, just hearing other people talking about their medical and doctor systems, I'm like, gosh, you just don't know how lucky we are here, because we've just grown up with it and take it for granted almost. And then you're like,
Oh, we're very lucky. I mean, we can find your breast cancer, we can treat it, support you all the way through, you know, through the public system, you'll get great care and at no cost.
Wow. So. That's amazing. Mm. Yeah. It's epic. You're amazing. So what made you choose to become a breast clinician? And what's the journey? Like, so you had to do your GP.
Yeah, so I did medicine.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I did my undergrad, then I did medicine. It's a long journey. And then
how many years?
I did 8 years at university.
Oh, my God.
Before I got a job. So, you know, that's a big hex debt.
When did you start uni? Right out of school? Did you know you wanted to be a doctor?
It's very... I wanted to be a vet. I did my undergrad in Melbourne, and you had to do science first, and I liked the human subjects more than the animal subjects, and then obviously didn't get into vet, and then got into postgraduate medicine up here in Queensland.
Yeah. Oh, cool.
So I moved to Queensland and did 4 years of medicine at University of Queensland, and then eventually settled on general practice after dipping my toe in a few other specialties, and loved it. So general practice is great. I obviously, being a female GP, did lots of women's health and all sort of, it's just where you sort of your interest lies. And I've always done a lot of other stuff apart from sitting in my office seeing patients all day. So I do a lot of surgical assisting, and was working with one of the breast surgeons one day who said, why don't you come and be my breast clinician? And I was like, what's a breast clinician? So I looked into it a little bit and thought, oh, I'll give that a go. You know, it's sort of my interest area.
Yeah,
I really like it. Having a little niche kind of suits my personality rather than knowing a little bit about everything, you know, to be a bit more of an expert at one thing. So
yeah, I totally get that, because, I mean, like, far out, medicine and health is so freaking huge that, like, when you're a GP, it's like everything, all topics.
Yeah, and you're expected to know a bit about everything that walks through the door. So it's, you know, it can be stressful. And there's a lot of people who are really good at it out there.
And then it would be so cool to, like, then, like, drill down into that one topic and, like, feel like you can become that expert and super knowledgeable, and then, like, help that area, like, super focused.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, it's always nice when I get phone calls from GPs asking me about breast stuff.
Yeah.
Like, oh, there's someone the same as us, but, you know, this is her area. Like, when I was a GP, if I had someone with a weird skin thing, I'd ring the skin GP.
Knew a lot more
about that. So, you know, you go and see your skin doctor for your skin check, and a lot of women these days are choosing to go and see someone for their breast checks as well, just as a, you know, add it to their list of things to do.
Okay. Wow. Oh. So 8 years of study, and then now there's even more study that you've been doing.
Yeah, so that was 8 years before I could get a job as a doctor. And so then I did my general practice training after a few years, so that was – four years?
Oh my God.
Then I worked as a GP for a while. So you're working during this time.
Okay.
So I did 10 years as a GP. Doing the Australasian Society of Breast Physicians training at the moment, and almost finished that. So that's
so cool.
Oh, that's so cool.
Leah's so smart.
4 or 5 years.
So smart.
I know.
Yes, take it.
What advice would you give someone who wanted to go into medicine? Like, they're thinking, oh, I want to be a doctor. What would they do? Or what's like the kind of mindset you need for that kind of work?
Yeah, that's a good question.
Yeah.
Mm.
I think traditionally people have thought about going into medicine because they think it's, you know, good career security, which it is. I mean, there's always going to be sick people out there.
Yeah.
anywhere, you know, a good income. Don't go into medicine if you like to have lots of money and not put in the time for it, because yeah. it's toil based. There's no passive income in medicine, really. Yeah. I've yet to find it.
we could help you there.
But you know, if there are specialties within medicine that if you're not much of a people person, you could probably go into. But yeah. I think most of the time, you've got to, you know, enjoy talking to people and knowing about their story and having some compassion and wanting to, yeah. you know, help them.
Yeah. yeah. Wow, that's beautiful.
That's so
and
beautiful.
And also can handle blood.
Well, there's specialties about that as well.
It's like, I cannot.
Yeah, hand is down.
Yeah. I mean, you know, on forums and things I see, you know, medical students freaking out because they faint every time they see a needle, and I think, oh, wow.
Wow.
But they're determined to get past it because they want to do medicine and they know this is just something they can get past, and I just admire that. I never had that problem. The more blood and guts, the better as far as I was concerned. But, but yeah, that would be a really big barrier because it's a big part of certainly being a junior doctor. Stick a lot of needles in people. So, but, you know, you can get past these things, but you've got to want to do it for the right reasons.
Yeah, and the discipline to do all those years.
There's a lot of study. And it's getting harder and harder to get on training programs and all that sort of stuff. Yeah, absolutely.
Why?
It's so competitive. And there's so many medical students coming out these days.
Wow.
And there's just not exponentially bigger
how interesting.
Training programs for them to go on to. So it's super competitive.
Wow.
Yeah.
How interesting.
Mm.
Oh, how cool. I think, and I guess it must be so rewarding. Like it must be a super rewarding career. Like,
it is.
I mean, you're saving lives. Like you can't get.
Yeah. Your wins are pretty good. Your wins are good. Your losses are not so good.
Yeah.
But, you know, I don't have too many days where I come home and think, oh, I didn't achieve anything for anyone today. You know, not that you think about that every day, but, you know. Yeah, it's good. I like it.
Yeah.
Yay. Yay for liking what you do.
Yeah,
don't
so important.
Don't they say if you like what you do, you don't work a day in your life?
I feel it.
I totally feel it. I still feel like sometimes you work, but
That's just like life, the thing though, is, isn't like, it? It's like it's that fulfillment though. It's tough work, and like you do the work, but then you're like, man, it was good.
Yeah,
like, I feel good.
And that's kind of part of the fulfillment, isn't it? Like working, putting so much energy and effort into something, and then it. Achieving something, accomplishing something. Like, that is fulfillment, really. So like, I don't want to just lay on the beach all day, do I?
Not every day.
Not every day. I don't.
I would get so bored.
You don't make great accomplishments every day. But, you know, once every few months someone will come in and say, you know, last year when I saw you, you said this and I did it. And you go, wow, really?
Yeah,
that's awesome.
So cool.
Yeah.
God, I think if anyone even just starts checking their breasts regularly, like, boom.
Yeah.
Like that is a massive accomplishment.
Yeah, yeah. And just knowing what things to look for and that's what to go and, you know, see your doctor about. They're the expert,
Yeah.
So true.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for coming on the show, Leah, and sharing all of your wisdom and all of your knowledge and for making us all more breast aware and potentially saving lives now that other people have now heard this message. It's now spreading. Like this, how amazing is it to think that?
Well, I
think it's that, you know, we might have heard one thing somewhere and now we're going to do it and it could potentially save our lives.
Absolutely. If someone says, that nipple that's now pointing you. Yeah. Maybe that's not normal. I should go and see someone.
Yeah. And tell your family, tell your friends.
Yeah.
Like make it a subject that is talked about because it's just going to make it like life better for anyone who does suffer from
this. Yeah. I think it's like anyone who listens to this, share it with one other woman in your life. Even if they don't want to listen to the whole podcast, just tell them. Tell them about it.
Yeah.
Tell them to check their boobs. Do it together.
Yes.
Why not? The more the merrier.
A breast check party.
All right.
Now we're dropping plates. It's our cue to end. Have a great day, everyone. Thank you for listening. And we'll be back in your ears super soon. Thank you again to Dr. Leah Freeman for coming on the show. And we are so grateful for your time.
Yes. Oh, my pleasure. Anytime.
Guys, we had to come back on the air because we just realized that we have these, I call them like fast, hot questions. We're like, but what about this? And what about that? And what about this? And we felt like they were silly questions, but then we realized actually if we have these questions that maybe some other people have these questions too. So we're going to come back on 5 to 10 more minutes talking about breast awareness because we had more questions.
Yeah, I feel like this will be an even better episode.
I know, right? Okay, so we talked about does it change depending on if you have like bigger boobs rather than smaller boobs?
No.
Your risk of breast cancer?
No. So, but obviously women who have bigger breasts can find it more difficult to examine their breasts just because there's more tissue. Things, you know, can hide in amongst that breast tissue that you may not be aware of. But no, they're not at more increased risk of developing a breast cancer purely due to the size of their breasts. The other thing we talked about was breast density.
Yes.
That you brought up. Did we talk about that on the podcast?
No, we talked about that. But you know what we need to talk about is finding a lump because we didn't specify that when you find a lump, go see your doctor. Do not book in for a mammogram.
At breast screen.
At breast screen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So breast screen is a screening program for asymptomatic women. So we want to see women who don't have any concerns about their breasts and find if there's something in there that, you know, they're not aware of that we can see with the technology. If you have a lump, you need to go and see your doctor because if you have a lump and think, okay, I'll just go and have my breast screen mammogram and, you know, not every breast cancer can be seen on mammogram.
Yeah.
So you might just get your well woman letter that says everything's all good, we can't see anything that we're worried about, and you're falsely reassured when really there is something. So if you have a symptom, you need to go and see your doctor because your workup needs to be different than just going and having a mammogram at breast screen.
Yes. I also asked, do mammograms, like say you have a lump or even just in general, do mammograms make cancer worse if you have it or – do they cause it?
That's controversial. No is the short answer. Look, if you were to have a mammogram, you know, once a week for your whole life, yes, you're probably getting way too much radiation.
Yes.
And yes, there's a risk of that. But
no one's getting that, no right?
Absolutely. So the amount of radiation, which is a scary word for a lot of people, but radiation is just, we get background radiation all the time. So just walking around in the street, a mammogram is equal to 22 days of background radiation just wandering around.
Okay.
Wow.
So
okay.
It's also the equivalent to a 20-hour flight.
Yeah.
People worry, you know, think why is you're closer to the sun, as you know, there's solar flares, all sorts of things that give off radiation when you're flying in your jet across to Europe. And you know, 20-hour flight is the equivalent to having the same amount of radiation as a mammogram.
Yep. So and you don't really think about that when you get on a flight.
No one's gonna give up their overseas holiday.
Yeah. No, they're not. No,
true.
For maybe they are.
Maybe.
Maybe. I don't know.
What was another one? It was like your bra.
Oh, yeah. I asked if wearing a bra or not wearing a bra causes cancer.
No, it doesn't. Look, it's a good question because I get asked all the time, you know, should I not be wearing underwire bras? Well, don't wear them if they're uncomfortable.
Yeah.
You know, if you can't wait to get it off at night, then, yeah, maybe you need to refit your bra or something, but it's not going to cause cancer.
I'm all about the crop tops. I hate underwire.
Yeah.
No underwire.
I'm always like, if I'm ever wearing an underwire bra, I'm like, get this thing off.
Yeah, it's like rip it off as soon as you get home.
I just want a crop top. Really tight one.
I just like to wear no bra. I'll be honest. Like, I'm a no bra person.
I wear no bras.
Much more comfortable. Go for comfort. If it's comfortable, it's fine. But it's not going to change your risk of cancer.
What about, because I always wonder,
but it might make them saggier. So, apparently.
Well, so that's depending on your tissue.
We should do,
but if we do yoga
and strengthen our chest muscles, this will lift the breasts, right?
No, you just have big pecs. Oh, your boobs will droop over your pecs, but you know.
Oh God,
wear a bra.
Okay.
Oh my God, that's funny.
Still do my body, guys.
Yeah, do that.
Still work your muscles.
Still work your body. It's awesome. And then our last question, if we have covered them all, was breast implants.
Mm-hmm.
Like, how do people go about doing a breast check? And
the same way you do when you don't have breast implants. So breast implants are either inserted behind your pec muscle or in front of your pec muscle and behind your breast tissue. So your breast tissue is sitting above your breast implant. So between your fingers and your breast implant is all your breast tissue.
So
you can feel it over the implant.
Wow. This is weird. I've never thought about it.
So when you have the breast tissue, because what is it my breast tissue connected to now because I don't have breast implants?
Yeah. Well, it's just sitting on your
It's just sitting
muscle.
There.
Yeah. So there's a
floating around.
Exactly. There's a potential space we talk about in medicine, potential spaces, which are just things that we can make, you know, between behind the breast tissue and in front of your pec muscle.
Wow.
Yeah. So your implant can either sit in there or we often put it behind the pec muscle.
Interesting. Oh. And is there any, like, risk with getting breast implants and, like, any linkages to cancer or anything?
So it's very topical at the moment. So there's you know, as with all things in medicine, the more women we have with breast implants, the more we see complications and things developing. Yeah. So in recent years, we've noticed women have developed a thing called anaplastic large cell lymphoma, which is a very rare cancer that is associated with breast implants and specific types of breast implants. But it's extremely rare.
Okay.
So
everyone, it's extremely rare.
It's extremely rare. And it has good clinical signs, as in women who develop it get a swollen breast and they get fluid sitting around their implant.
Okay.
So, you know, we can pick it up. You know, if you notice a change with your breast implants, you know, make sure you go and see someone. Mm-hmm. We can pick it up and it's, as I said, very rare. Underline that twice. But, you know, and we can diagnose it easily. So, but it, you know, it is a thing that it's a new thing that we're seeing because women are having breast implants. So, but it's certainly not a reason to go and panic and have your breast implants taken out, because most implants are in there and uncomplicated and never going to cause you that problem. But if you notice a change, you need to go and see someone. You're much more likely to just to develop a normal breast cancer because 1 in 8 women are going to get that.
Any problem
associated with your implant.
So it's so like regardless of if you had the implants
just
or
still
not.
Still do the breast checks.
Yes, just check them.
Go and have a chat to your doctor if you're worried about them.
Oh, so good. Well, I'm really glad that we covered these last questions that we had that we thought were dumb questions but actually weren't dumb questions.
Not at all.
And I think it's just a reminder to celebrate amazingness of breasts, like all shapes and sizes. Isn't it amazing? Everyone
and
looks so different.
Believe me, they come in all shapes and sizes.
you must have seen so many boobs.
How many, you wonder?
How many have I seen?
Yeah. Jeez. She's like, I don't keep count.
20 per day. Well, actually, 40 per day.
Wow.
Everyone has two.
Oh, my gosh.
Most women have two. Some women don't. Some women have none. You know.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yep. That's so interesting.
Oh, and you shared something yesterday when we were chatting that people get tattoos, like, on there once they get – because they get – people get, what are they called?
Double mastectomy.
So you have a mastectomy, and then some women choose to have a reconstruction.
Yes.
So they have.
So what do they put on their old breast implants?
So they can either have breast implants or they can have tissue from another part of their body make breasts. And they do some crazy amazing things these days. It's coming along. But, you know, if we've had to take the nipple off as part of your surgery, a lot of women, when they have their reconstruction, don't have a nipple, obviously.
Yeah.
So they can get tattoos and things, as you know, in place of their nipples, and people put some amazing things on there.
How cool.
So yeah, you said that someone put pig snouts on them.
Yeah I saw a lady that had little pig snouts as her nipples because she liked pigs,
like, because why
made
not
her smile when she looked in the mirror. Isn't, so why not,
because isn't that nice? It made me smile when I looked in the mirror.
Yeah,
it's like
so important.
So important. Something that can
so important,
you know, didn't make her happy for a long
time.
Oh, wow.
Now get a bit of pleasure out of it, so you know, glass half full.
So amazing. Oh. And like amazing, obviously, movement just forward in medicine that we are able to do these operations and like get people feeling good again.
Mm.
Yep.
So important.
Mm.
Well,
so
thank
cool.
you for coming back on
My
for these
pleasure.
Last 5 minutes. I feel like they're very important questions.
We'll talk to you guys soon. Have a great day.
Bye. Bye.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.